Hello, and welcome to New World Witchery's Folk Magician's Notebook for September 2022. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local Farmer's Almanac. Let's take a look at the moon in the skies for September 2022. The full moon comes on September 10th in the sign of Pisces and is sometimes called the barley moon, harvest moon, or wine moon for those with Western European roots, or the corn moon among indigenous tribes like the Cherokee, also known as the Kitowa. The new moon date is September 25th this month. It will be in the sign of Virgo. Some notable astrological dates. We begin this month waxing towards the first quarter in Sagittarius, so if you have some canning or pruning to do in the garden, it's a good time to get that done. As we get to the end of the first week, we'll be going from Aquarius into Pisces, meaning that the moon becomes full in the realm of the mind and dreaming, so pay special attention to what you dream and those stray thoughts that make their way to you. The waning moon's last quarter happens in Gemini, which may be a sign to talk less and think more as well, making the month a good one for introspection. It's also a good time to harvest your goodies out of the garden and enjoy them, right before the autumnal equinox, which happens on the 22nd, balancing light and dark and making it a good time for any magic that needs that liminal tipping point power. The new moon in Virgo asks us to be accountable with our dark side and to confront any fears we might have, acknowledging them and then moving past them as needed. On the 29th, we have Michaelmas, celebrating the feast of St. Michael the Archangel with lots of symbolism surrounding dragons, snakes, battles, and so forth. So if you have any personal demons you need to fight and cast away, this can be a powerful time for that magic or any other serpentine sorcery. Oh, and don't forget that your blackberry picking should be done by Michaelmas too, or else you'll be getting devil's spit or worse when you pick them after that date. We finish up the month with the moon waning again through Scorpio and Sagittarius, making it a good time to get a little bit louder, a little bit sultrier, and a lot wilder. Time to gear up for the raucousness of October. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and a proverb for the month. Our playing card of this month is Ace of Clubs, which represents a cave, a lonely figure, a rock, or a hill, a feeling of isolation and solitude. For some, this card is one that causes anxiety because it means spending time with yourself and yourself alone for company. And that kind of introspection can be extremely uncomfortable for many, and the feeling of being isolated or hidden away in a cave can send a chill down one's spine. After all, the cave can also be a place of shadows and deception. Think only of the Platonic cave allegory in which shadows cast on the wall are but imitations of the real-world objects they represent. Yet caves are also places of refuge, and some caves are the beginnings of mysterious underground worlds full of discovery and wonder. You can lose yourself in them, so there's danger, but there's also a sense of breathtaking awe when standing in a pitch-black cavern, feeling the immensity of the earth around you. Spending time in solitude can be a protective or restorative act, like when Superman visits his Fortress of Solitude, for example. It's a chance to know ourselves a little bit better, and while that can be scary, it's often necessary. This card tells us it's time to look inside or spend time on our own. If it's paired with a card like the Two of Hearts, that may mean we need to put our physical intimacy with another person aside for a bit and really open up and be vulnerable with them, letting them into our solitary, protected space. With something like a Ten of Spades, it may be calling on us to do some spiritual reflection or deal with some religious trauma from our past. Our tarot card of the month is the Hermit. Now, there are several cards that indicate a time for reflection and introspection in the tarot. The Star, the Hanged Man, or the Six of Cups can all ask us to spend time in contemplation and memory. The Hermit, however, also carries the hopeful rays of a star in his lantern. We are visiting him high up on his mountain and hoping that he can help us find our way. Like his lamp, though, he assures us that our best light is within us. He tells us not only to take a break and think about our lives, but to ask ourselves about our purpose. His place at the top of a peak indicates that we can acknowledge how far we've come, but the rest he offers isn't about the next climb so much as the journey back down. We have to have those moments, the times after triumph, the times when we are alone with our thoughts and deeds and ask, "So what now?" Our encounter with him says that we too have a lot of strength and light within us, and that it's okay to just sit with that for a while. Our purpose will come in time, our next goals and destinations will arise eventually. For now, it's just us. Does that scare us? Or does it give us peace? Our folk divination method of the month, we're looking at tea leaf or coffee ground divination. We're settling in and getting cozy as we look at your favorite cuppa to see what it tells you about yourself and your potential futures. This method, commonly known as tassiomancy and sometimes coffeeomancy or caffeeomancy, also involves using the dregs of a cup of liquid to find various symbols and interpret them in connection to the person who has asked the question. I've had both my tea leaves and coffee grounds read, and while I cannot necessarily speak to the accuracy of the predictions, it's been one of the methods I've really enjoyed the most simply because it's so calm and so very mundane. Any brewed beverage that's likely to have detritus from the brewing process left in the serving ware is able to be interpreted. This practice relies on both a belief in contagious magic, enchanted effects spread through contact as when your lips touch the tea or cup, and an ability to understand symbolism and metaphor in the Rorschach-like tea blots being read. So good on you if you've got some English classes or a Psych 101 and are ready to dive deep into some symbolism. The method for preparing the cup usually involves having both the mug of coffee or tea and a saucer. The drink should be prepared loosely for poured over the grounds, although you can modify it a bit so long as there is at least some material at the bottom. The person asking a question drinks down to the last bit but leaves enough that the grounds or leaves in the brew can move in the cup when swirled. The swirling is often a major part of the divination, as the drinker is instructed to swirl everything slowly, exactly 3 times, setting the liquid and detritus in motion, and then cover it with a saucer and invert it. The reader then waits a moment for everything to drip and settle, and turns the mug back over to see where the soggy bits of plant matter have ended up. From there, it's up to the reader to interpret the globs and the streaks. Some will take note of the position in the mug as though it were a clock face with a blob that looks like a person around the 3 o'clock position, meaning that someone important will be arriving in the next 3 months or something similar. Some divide the cup into 4 quadrants, representing the 4 directions, or 4 seasons, and then would interpret this a symbol like a pig in the south as being a loss of one's fortunes. Some pay more attention to whether the blots are near the bottom or the rim of the cup, with the rim representing good things or good news coming, and the bottom more serious matters like marriage or death. Some of the symbols one might see? A line going straight from the bottom to the top indicates a funeral in the coming year. A ring formed high up near the rim means good news or a letter. A ring formed near the bottom means a marriage. A letter is taken to be the initial of someone important, usually a future spouse. A long stem or line means a tall person coming. An ant, bee, or bat means a period of hard work to come. Symbols like crabs or arrows can be taken as astrological signs connected to people, such as Sagittarius or Cancer. A dog can mean a good friend, although in popular culture, there's at least one film series where the dog is interpreted as a bad omen, such as the black shuck dog of the British Isles. A rose or flower can be a new romance. A sun or a leaf can be a new beginning about to come. Wings can be either a note to release yourself from bondage and do what you wish, or a warning that soon someone you love will be leaving, maybe even possibly dying, as the wings can be angel wings. A spoon or a bowl means someone generous, while a fork or a knife means someone untrustworthy. And finally, a question mark can mean that you need to change your plans or that something mysterious will happen in your life soon. You can find whole books of these symbols, and you can use other symbolic interpretation guides, like a dream book, to offer some insight as well. The best way to do this, though, is to start with a few basic ideas and then see what you think the symbols mean as you read them. There's also a handful of coffee or tea lore that works when the cup is full, too. If your coffee has bubbles in it, drinking it all before they go away is thought to bring you good luck or especially money. If you see tea leaves floating in your cup, counting them can tell you how many lovers you'll have left in your life. And finally, you shouldn't look into a boiling coffee or a teapot, or else you'll boil away your future chances at romance. Our witch's proverb of the month: one often meets one's fate on the road taken to avoid her. No! Our folktale of the month is The Peddler of Swatham, as recorded by Joseph Jacobs. In the old days, when London Bridge was lined with shops from one end to the others, and salmon swam under the arches, there lived at Swatham in Norfolk a poor peddler. He'd much ado to make about his living, trudging back and forth about with his pack, and his dog at his heels, and at the close of the day's labor, he was but too glad to sit down and sleep. Now it fell out one night that he dreamed a dream, and therein he saw the great bridge of London town, and it sounded in his ears that if he went there he should hear joyful news. He made little count of the dream, but on the following night it came back to him again, and again on the third night. Then he said within himself, well, I must needs try the issue of it, and so he trudged up to London town. Long was the way, and right glad was he when he stood on the great bridge, and saw the tall houses on the right-hand side and the left, and had glimpses of the water running and the ships sailing by. All day long he paced to and fro, but he heard nothing that might yield him comfort. And again on the morrow he stood and he gazed. He paced afresh the length of the London Bridge, but not did he see and not did he hear. Now the third day being come, he stood still and gazed, and a shopkeeper hard by spoke to him. "Friend," said he, "I wonder much at your fruitless standing. Have you no wares to sell?" "No, indeed," quoth the peddler. "And yet you do not beg for alms?" "Not so long as I can keep myself." "Then what, I pray thee, dost thou want here, and what may thy business be?"
"Well, kind sir, to tell the truth, I dreamed that if I came hither I should hear good news."
Right heartily did the shopkeeper laugh.
"Nay, thou must be a fool to take a journey on such a silly errand. I'll tell thee, poor silly country fellow, that I myself dreamed too of the nights, and that last night I dreamt myself to be down in Swatham, a place clean unknown to me, but in Norfolk, if I'm not mistaken, and methought I was in an orchard behind a peddler's house, and in that orchard was a great oak tree. Then meseemed that if I digged, I should find beneath that tree a great treasure. But you think I'm such a fool as to take on a long and wearisome journey for all that silly dream? No, my good fellow. Learn wit from a wiser man than thyself. Get thee home and mind thy business." When the peddler heard this, he spoke no word, but was exceeding glad in himself and returned home speedily. Then he digged underneath the great oak tree, and he found a prodigious great treasure. He grew exceeding rich, but he did not forget his duty and the pride of his riches, for he built up again the church at Swatham, and when he died, they put up a statue of him therein all in stone, with his pack at his back and his dog at his heels. And there it stands to this day. Paying attention to our dreams is a mixed bag. On the one hand, we often have really interesting or entertaining dreams. Ask me about running from velociraptors armed only with a shopping cart full of bacon, for example. On the other hand, listening to dreams of others can be tedious, especially if we don't understand all the symbolism or contexts, because everything feels so disjointed and nonsensical. Yet dreams have been seen as laden with significance for thousands of years, and even people who absolutely abhor the idea of magic and witchcraft will claim that dreams mean something and put stock in their prophetic power from time to time. At its heart, this story, which has numerous variations from places like Japan, Scandinavia, and even a version of Paulo Coelho's famous novel The Alchemist, tells us to pay attention to our dreams. What's more, it says that sometimes an irrational decision, guided by something as insistent as a repeated dream, is the right decision to make. Our waking hours are often a time of logic, of reason, a straightforward, no-nonsense thinking. There is absolutely a place for that, and few of us would want a doctor about to perform surgery to say that a dream convinced her to amputate the limb when we're just here to get a mole removed. But listening to the world of dreams means opening ourselves up to a language of symbolism, a personal mythical landscape that can do more than connect point A to point B. Instead, it tells us that those points already exist together on the same map, but that the straight line makes us miss some of the truly wonderful points if we only went one way. We have a freedom to wander in dreams, and listening to them during our waking life can offer us fresh eyes and new moments of awe if we let that happen. After all, many of us have experienced a sensation of something we dreamed happening, almost a deja vu-like occurrence, and wondered, how in the world did I dream this? Dreams also give us hope. So long as we are alive, we can usually dream. And in that space, we are more similar than we are different. We can see people we've lost, which can be heartbreaking upon waking, and I speak from experience here, but I wouldn't trade those moments either. We can touch a dragon, or a unicorn, or even just a really interesting turtle if we want. We can be guided to new ideas, or revisit old ones. And sometimes, maybe we can even find a buried treasure or two deep within us. Enjoy your autumn dreams, and look for me there beneath the big oak tree. I'll bring the shovels, and maybe a dinosaur. We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time, let's make a broom. Brooms are one of the tools most commonly associated with witches. We have a pretty extensive web article about them if you're interested. They're also one of the things that seem to emerge in virtually every craft store, grocery store, and even local drugstore around this time of year, making the air around them rich with cinnamon scents. Sometimes even a little too rich, especially the ones that use that artificial cinnamon smell. Blech. You can make your own broom fairly easily too, using things that grow near you. It's a great way to feel a connection with a magical helper tool that you can keep and work with for a long time to come. A traditional witch's besom is usually made of an ash or oak handle, birch bristles, and bound with willow withes, which are strips of willow bark lightly treated to make them somewhat leather-like. If you have those things, fantastic. If not, you can improvise a good bit based on what is in your region, which makes it even more magical, I think. You want to get a solid wooden handle, and if you can find a fallen branch that's in good condition, that works wonderfully. It should be between 3 to 5 feet long, although that length is really up to you and what you're comfortable with. It should also be at least a couple of inches thick and fairly solid, not easily broken or bent. Next, you'll gather up bristle material. This can be tall wild grasses, thin branches from bushes or brambles. Just pick carefully and wear gloves. Or even strips of broomcorn bought from the local craft store if you like. You'll also want some good solid twine, like jute, another reason to go to the craft or hardware store. You need to get a pan of water or a tub and soak the bristle material for at least half an hour or up to overnight. You do this so they'll be flexible and bendy when you make the broom. Take them out and pat them relatively dry, then get your handle. Some folks like to put a nail through the bottom of it as it can help with anchoring the bristles, but you don't really need to, especially since this isn't necessarily a broom for sweeping. Take a bundle of bristle material and put it against the broom handle. And this is important, make it go the wrong way, so it's pointing up the broom handle rather than pointing down. Wrap the bristle material tightly at the bottom, at the end of the broom with the twine, and repeat with more bristle material, rotating the broom a bit so that the bristles go fully around the broom as you work. You can do several layers if you like. Make sure to bind with the twine as tight as you can pull it. You can even get somebody to help you with it. Tie off the binding, again, as tightly as you can. And now take the still damp bristles and fold them back down over the binding so they are pointing down below the bottom of the broom. Pull them tightly down over the binding and begin wrapping over the top of the bristles where the binding was, again, as tightly as you can. Do several layers of binding if you need to, and tie it off when you feel it's good and secure. You can weave the loose ends of the binding into the broom, snip them off, or leave them loose if you like. You should now have something looking like a good old-fashioned broom. The more you practice, the better you'll get at this, and it's easier than it sounds. We'll put a link to a video on how to do this in our show notes too, just in case. If you can't do the broom making from scratch, you can always buy a pre-made broom and decorate it too. Heck, feel free to decorate one that you make from scratch as well. You can paint it, carve runes or markings into it, whatever works. When you're done, hang it on your door as a protection charm or leave it behind the door to guard against harm. And of course, you can always flip it upside down to get rid of unwanted guests. Happy flying, witches. That's it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this month. We hope you have a fantastic month ahead of you and that you're looking forward to the shift into the autumn season. If you'd like to help support the show and our work, you can visit us at patreon.com/newworldwitchery, where you can throw a dollar a month or whatever you can afford our way. Always helps to make the show a little bit better, and we do appreciate it immensely. We don't do advertisements on the show, so Patreon support is really all we got. We do appreciate every dollar that comes our way that way. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can do that through email, compassandkey@gmail.com or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on all the various social media sites as well, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those places. We're there. We enjoy doing this Folk Magician's Notebook for you every month, and we hope that you're getting some joy out of it too as we head into the fall season and get close to wrapping up our first year here of doing the Folk Magician's Notebook. We'd love to hear from you, hear what you think of it, and hear if there's stuff that you'd like us to be including that we haven't mentioned before as well. So that'll do it for this time. Thank you again so much for joining us, and until next time, be well.